Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Art and Labor, the podcast on the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. I am OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love.
So today we have a pre-recorded interview with Eric Shoney of the Nobodies. They are a Brooklyn-based drag-like collective, sort of, who have a YouTube channel dedicated to drag and wrestling, and it's very cool. And Eric wrote a great piece about, like, fair compensation in nightlife that we get into and discuss more with him directly. But we just wanted to intro the episode up at the top and talk a little bit more about, like, our experiences working with venues and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people might know that me and Lucia met through a performance art open mic, so we understand that world a little bit as well.
The original do something by Larry Lyre Mearing.
More
Lyre.
Do something.
do something.
With Laura Lyre.
Yeah, someone, where'd you find this?
I remember, like, getting back to weird precarious labor. Those were Fiverr drops. Those were that person on Fiverr who does drops.
Yeah. So bizarre. Fiverr is insane.
Yeah. The Fiverr's ads all around the subway and stuff, and ads to things similar to Fiverr are just
do something. In doers we trust.
So gross.
What? How do I know when I'm doing something? How do I know when I'm... Am I a doer right now?
You're a doer if you're getting $5 for an hour or more of your labor.
You're a doer when you have a clean-cut beard.
Boy.
you're a doer when you have tassels on your shoes.
Oh boy. You know you're a doer when.
Yeah. Yeah. You know you're a doer when your blood pressure raises over 97.
You ever jealous of how delivery people get treated like utter shit in the city and get paid fucking nothing because they're all in precarious immigration situations and forced to work like horrible, physically demanding hours delivering food to yuppies all day and want a little piece of that?
You must be a doer. Hey, why don't you find a way to like
join Post Rabbits today?
Oh, God.
Or whatever the fuck. I think I just combined two of them.
Post Rabbits?
Postmates. And
Task Rabbit. Yeah. That's good. I just want to quit my life and join Handy. You know, every day is a surprise.
Yeah, the PS1 workers just going to get mass fired, and they're going to bring in Handy, and all the art exhibits are going to be like Band-Aids, like slapdash.
Honestly, great idea, because you can hire a little old lady from Honduras for like $10.
Yeah, for like 3 hours.
Yeah. Oh my God. You know, get enough of them and they can lift something together, you know? And then they feel the camaraderie of that.
And you know, the museum saves money, and don't you want the museum to survive, everyone?
Look, I don't know if I can handle going to a museum opening where people aren't wearing the most expensive things they can buy. And, like...
It just wouldn't be fair. It just wouldn't be fair for one CEO to make less than a different CEO. You understand.
It's true, because imagine one of them gets to speed travel to Dubai...
And one of them has to take coach? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding?
No, it's crazy. Listen, Concorde's for all of them. Honestly, they're not getting everywhere they need to be. And the birthday party's in Ibiza. It's difficult.
I'm sorry I lost the invitation. I get so many gallery invitations a week, and I just spaced and forgot it. So... I'm sorry, I can't pay you this week because I have to go to Ibiza immediately.
Honestly, though,
I lost the invitation, so I couldn't book the flight in advance. And I'm just going to have to take it out of your paycheck for now. I'll get you back.
Honestly, though, why does that person even have a gallery when, like, you know, I'm sitting on a pile of looted Nazi art and I'm like ready to sell it right now. And like,
stuff is priced to sell.
Seriously, like, why do you even have a venue? Because I have this. Like, listen, my grandparents were all Nazis, okay? And we have, like, tons of other people's family heirlooms.
My heritage and my culture.
Yeah.
Not a race.
Now it is. It's great. I didn't have any before.
Oh, man. I wanted to bring up, everybody's talking about how Netflix is complicit in charter schools that are defunding the LA teachers who were on strike up until very recently. So are galleries.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if I can boycott Netflix. That's a tough one, you know? Like,
I've never paid for Netflix, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to watch, though, and that changes their analytics, and they're going to know, true. Like, I've been going through all of Star Trek Next Generation. Like, I've logged in, at this point, 30 hours of just that show on Netflix. Like, it's nuts.
I mean, like, do you watch any original Netflix content?
Oh, yeah.
Which one? I'm trying to think of which one I've watched.
Well, a friend of mine just had a movie go up on there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was Cam.
Oh.
Yeah, that's some Netflix original stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of the times it's like they'll just buy a thing and call it a Netflix original, too.
Oh, totally. Yeah, they're just like another form of distribution that all the hot young talent's trying to get exposure with. And just guaranteed, it seems that the venue, whatever it is, brick and mortar or, you know, ones and zeros based. It's always going to be fucked up. It's always it's like you get a venue and then you get fucked. I don't know what the problem is.
They're all bad.
Bad.
Yeah, we get into that with our guests about physical venues.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned some that are a little better than others.
Evil.
We don't name names about, I named names about one that I had a bad experience with, but it's also like, I still go there.
Yeah, that's like, this whole thing, I don't know, I'm tired.
I want there to be a big open letter to these venues being like, this is, you know, especially the ones that like call themselves or like bill themselves as like DIY venues. I think those would be open to an open letter of some sort. I really think that's the way to go about this stuff if people aren't in a position to strike or whatever.
Oh, totally. Like, actually getting some solidarity at least among people who need support. It's like, oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to be a small business tyrant because I don't have the capital to back up my cool empty room where I just have
my
interesting
dogs.
Artists play. Yeah. My dogs.
Well, I think about some of these venue owners have children own property and shit.
Yeah.
And then continue to own these venues and run these venues. And it's just like, cool. Because you have so much, you're able to have children and buy. We've talked about this on the podcast before.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little hard because, like, at the end of the day, I do hope that my life is like, oh, I have enough money to have children.
Absolutely. But it's like everybody should be able to have what that person has. And a lot of the times their mindset is to just grow their current exploitative business model instead of like adjusting it to be a more of a like cooperative situation. Like that's like a brain disease that a lot of business owners get.
Well, it's also, yeah, I mean, fuck the stress, right?
Yeah.
Just like after watching so many people just in day-to-day experience, try to sustain a business and like to know that there is this weird entropy involved and like there's always going to be this wave of like hot new things that are the same, but like the competition keeps refreshing and you have to somehow keep involved. And it's like difficult if you have a venue, right? You're like, oh, I depend on this like cachet. I depend on the people that I invite in.
Right.
Right. Like, and if I am going to act as an intelligent venue operator, then I'm going to think about like what kind of communities I'm catering to. I'm not going to treat people as if they're interchangeable. Like that's not an intelligent way to run your business.
Well, that's how the good ones run. The bad ones are just like, how can I maximize what we're taking home at the end of the day and, you know, treat my employees like tissues instead of like the natural point where they would maybe get a raise to their hourly rate. I'm talking about the actual bar employees.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, you know, oh, we have this really popular night that's here every month. We should give them a cut of the bar to show them how much we appreciate them and totally. Want them to stay with us.
Yeah, because that's like performers are adding value to your business and like they are human beings who need to be supported. And that's just like that's the be all and end all. You can't really like.
But I think the bad venues, they just approach everyone as disposable, as like, you know.
Well, they do that because they have a short term vision. Yes. And like you start thinking short term probably because of fear and or greed.
Greed, yeah.
Greed and or fear and like, you know, just people thinking, fuck, like I am in this situation where I need to like get whatever is next. And it's like, okay, that is one way to think of it. But there is also the way to think of like, I am a venue that is positioned in this neighborhood. And there are people that are like directly affected by me existing in this space, and how can I allow the community in so that they are entertained by each other, and like I can facilitate and also like get them really drunk and show them cool shit to dance to
and just like good vibes and care about that and want to like, I think it's just, it's important to increase people's, like, minds. Like, I think the point that's reiterated a lot on this podcast is, like, you know, if you can't afford an employee, maybe you can't afford a business. Like, you know, like, it's a weird thing. I know we talked about that with the Artie Vierkant's article.
Yeah.
About health insurance in the arts and how it's grown to this level where it's completely unsustainable.
This actually like in a weird way is making me think of the Indonesian dance thing that I want to talk about, because it's like the opposite experience.
Yeah,
it's really crazy. So there's like the Javanese like, yeah. Indonesian there's like these people called Warok, and okay, they don't pay their dancers. Let me just tell you that. They don't pay their dancers shit, ever.
Oof.
It's crazy. The way that they work is just like, so the Warok are these dudes who believe that they have magical powers, and their magical powers will be taken away if they sleep with a woman. So instead, they find young boys from poor families, which in Indonesia just means like, oh, these families are like selling their kids to these dudes.
Right.
And then
which happens in places all over the world, like,
yeah.
I mean, including the United States and, you know, Greece and yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. We're like building a spectrum now of like the behavior of humans, and like definitely we don't want to do that, but this is still going on contemporaneously with our conversations. Right. Yeah. So like the Warok get these kids, and then they teach the kids, like they're like 12-year-old boys roughly. They can work up to like teenage years, but they can't work past that. Yeah. But their family gets money for them going into this service, and they're like expected to do whatever and be like wait on people hand and foot without speaking. And then they learn these dances where they like get all costumed up, and then they put on full face. So they have this like beautiful, incredible makeup on, and then they have these like really, really gorgeous costumes, and they do like super intricate dances, and it's like squadrons of these 12-year-old boys all doing this like amazing moves, and they're all like interlocking, and they have to be like the best at it because it's kind of has a little relationship to like geisha stuff or whatever, you know, like it's so traditional,
right?
There's a way to do it right. And then the Warrock kind of say like, yeah, well, we were like, oh, maybe this is like wrong or something, that we're perpetuating this culture. And then they were like, but then we thought about the dance and how nice it is, and we were like, ooh, exploitation is worth it on our end.
And that's, you know what that reminds me of in the news right now is Bryan Singer, because Bryan Singer is a famous Hollywood director who did X-Men First Class. He directed Bohemian Rhapsody, which was not like won the Golden Globe and was nominated for Best Picture and all this shit. He was removed as director, but I think he basically directed it.
What did like, he do?
Oh, he is what a rapist. He is a child rapist. He is a absolute scum of the earth. Person who was abused by him like dropped a story like today or yesterday that details like how like these young children who want to get into acting would be he was one of the first people who this is now like a thing. You start your own like digital production company, and then like you use that as a way to groom young talent into sex.
Oh, totally.
And he's
you make yourself the gatekeeper, and then eventually you just get to pick.
Yeah, and so part of it is like it's like a weird traditional song and dance of like, oh, I can act for you. I know how to do it. I'm gonna audition for this famous director and get a job and help my family or whatever. Like, and that's happening, you know, right here in the United States.
Yeah. Like, but it's at least like, at least we can think of it in this broader terms of like how the Model Alliance just passed like greater rights for child actors. And
yes,
like
just this year, right?
And yeah. So it's like, it's really fucked up that bad things happen, but it's also incredible that we live in a society that is like free to talk about this stuff. Cause it's like you go other places and like, I know everything sucks and we live in hell world and things are bad all over, but like, I think it rules that we are able to like find ways to change it. And like, I don't know.
And it's happening. It's happening. Like,
we have such a different standard now.
Yeah.
And that's like all you can really hope for, because there's always going to be people who are like, I'm a little villain, and I like kids because I suck.
But, or like, you know, these you know, tech entrepreneurs who are always going to try to cut the labor market, cut any wins that labor advocates win. It sucks, but it's good to not fall into the trappings of that and to just keep fighting. Like, it's worth it, and it's working, like, ultimately.
Yeah, we have to just look at, like, okay, if we're sliding in the scale of, like, you know, life quality and just ability to, I don't know, have agency in your government or whatever we base our necessities on. It's just like, we still are doing well enough to get ourselves back up into a place where everyone communicates enough to operate in unison.
Yeah, I mean, it's like certain people had to fight for the right to perform in clubs, and I would argue even in the 70s and 80s, clubs were more pressured to pay a good wage to performers, and the like recorded music market, when that took off, undercut into that in the same way that, like, you know, different tech keeps
disrupting. All these ding-dang disruptors. Yeah. Wait a minute. They were here yesterday, too?
Yeah, they were. They were here in the 80s and shit.
Oh, like, damn. Oh, it's almost like businesses are always doing the same thing.
Like, we had to fight to get into the clubs, and we had to fight to get a better wage in the clubs.
Mm-hmm. Just gotta fight. Hey,
gotta fight.
Don't underestimate the value of a good riot.
Yes, bitch, yes.
That's all I'm saying.
I hope, you know, we're just gonna walk out of the studio one day, get arrested for inciting a riot.
Hey, I didn't say, I just said don't underestimate the value of a good riot. You know, no, like, that's not telling anyone anything. Like,
it's just the ether out
there's a value to it.
There's a value to everything.
Exactly. It's just another experience.
Anyway, I really enjoyed this conversation with Eric. I thought we had a lot of really good points, and it's a scene that I feel like a lot of people aren't that familiar with. It's odd to me that so many people perform in New York City and have all like the same issues, but then nobody talks to each other. And we get into that. And that's what I would encourage is like, let's make connections. Let's have more things. Like back when I was programming more things for Silent Barn, that was like always something I would try to program with in mind, like whenever I did a zine fair, like it was similar. There's all these people who make small multiples or zines or chapbooks or comics or whatever the fuck they want to call them. And they're all like doing similar events, but none of them are ever at each other's events. So the point is to like curate a program or like organize a thing that is bringing in a lot of different people. Who are going through the similar problems and are interested in similar things more often than you'd think, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say, like, labor, you know, we all don't want to be taken advantage of. We all want different things with our lives. Like, and, you know, there's, like, somebody made, you know, maybe a book about cooking, and I'm not going to read it. But you know what? I still think it should exist.
Yeah.
But then...
I don't eat meat. There's so many meat cookbooks. I'll never read them.
But honestly, yo, I love dancing. I love dancers. I love performers. I love music. I love comedy.
Yeah.
And like all these things, they shouldn't be at odds. We should all just be fucking rocking it. We should just like, you know, think about it.
Something to consider. I think it would help everybody, raise everybody up if we all were working together more in general.
You know, just finding ways, because it's not clear. It's like easy to say, oh, we should work together. And I get it's not like, oh, of course, why didn't I think of that? It's like, ah, shit, that's a job in itself, learning how to.
Yeah, because you're already entrenched in a scene, right? Like, and you're just like, this is all there is. Like, I know these people. I know when to perform, but
it's like hard too. Because if you're in a scene, like for me, I'm like obsessed with doing my shit the best that I can. So there's like a weird view where I'm like, oh, I have to do my shit, and like if I focus on connecting with people, that'll take away from my shit. And it's like maybe you do it like you could do both.
It's hard to do both, but it's possible.
Yeah.
It's just navigating, like, that life
of doing shit.
Doing a lot at once. It's hard.
It's a lot. It's so much.
So it's nice. We had, like, a very relaxing weekend this weekend. And you,
hell yeah.
After a lot of work. This podcast becomes a lot more work. Like, you know, it's something that people, I feel like, discount a lot. People make fun of, understandably, I think it's good to make fun of this, but like, you know, everyone's a fucking podcaster, and it's like a bullshit, not a real job, it's a bullshit thing. And it's just like, it's selling yourself short.
Yeah.
And I get joking about it. It's cool and funny when Neo Yokio like has the oh, yeah. character.
Listen to my podcast.
It's like some rich asshole being like, yeah, of course you have a fucking podcast.
Yeah.
Like everyone has a podcast, but it doesn't mean it's not work. And it's
no, it's true. But stuff. Then there are some things it's like trying to build a community and then using a podcast to do that is different than being yeah. like, okay, here's my style tips for the week. Which I mean, I would. Yeah. I also have. A, yes. You know, I got a
several of those.
I got a person for that. let me just take a step back. I'm not opposed to style.
Yeah, I would love to do another YouTube episode because we did an episode
oh my God, yeah.
about the YouTube shooter who was thinking a lot about YouTube monetization and how that works and
yeah.
How that like structures the content in a way.
And it is something that we're going through too, like yeah. having discussions about how to bridge like communications with people who are all doing their thing and we're doing our thing. And even just like trying to find a time to talk to people is hard. And it's like, you know, thank you to the guests past and future who like meet us
everybody.
On that bridge. Yeah. Thanks.
So yeah, we hope you guys enjoy this interview with Eric Shoney, and we will see you next week and have fun.
Let's have fun.
Now we're rolling. All right. So welcome everyone to another Art and Labor. We're joined by special guest Eric Shoney.
Hi.
Yes. Eric wrote this great article called Drag Queens, Labor Rights, and the Cruel Power Dynamics of Gay Nightlife. And it's on VinePair, which seems to be a wine spawn con website. But it's like, I think it's so great and it should be like this conversation should be reaching a wider audience. Like,
so VinePair is like a super prominent beer and wine magazine.
Yes, yes.
And part of why I was excited to run this article on there is because, I, like you said, I do think it should be talked about more. And I think it's kind of a known quantity in the gay world that, like, you know, drag queens got it rough and nightlife is hard. But I think for people in the beer and wine industry who kind of just see drag queens as sort of, like, weird accoutrements in the gay world, like, they don't know any of what's happening at these places.
It's a perfect fit in that sense. I didn't even think of it like that because a lot of queens and DJs, they, what is it called? They do bottle service, right?
Right. Yeah.
I didn't even think of it that way. Like, I guess correct me if I'm wrong, but when you do bottle service, you get free alcohol all night and you get some money depending on how many people you bring to the club.
I mean, different clubs do it differently. I think that is sometimes what's happening. But I think in general, the way VinePair saw it when they approved the post is that, like, because they're a beer and wine magazine, they figured this is sort of an article about bar culture, which it is.
It is, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what interested them about it more than the kind of nightclub aspect. But that's obviously true.
I just wanted to bring up something that is near and dear to my heart, which seems like a sister cause. I was wondering if this was all like connected to the stripper strike, because I was following that last year and there's like a lot of like I live in Sunset Park and there used to be like a huge area of like, you know, There was like strip clubs everywhere and like porn shops and stuff. And that was like a part of that area. And it was kind of like the weird seedier blue collary, like 42nd Street or whatever. And there was also like a lot of issues of like race and class and like queer issues coming up in that realm. But they had like a huge strike and it went on for like months and months and they got some clubs to start like changing their routines in terms of like how to pay dancers and everything.
You know, it's kind of a shame that there isn't more of like a link up between the drag world and the strip world. Like, I don't see those communities overlapping. that much. I know that there's like a drag queen who I've DJed with in Portland named Patrick Buckmaster, who does a lot of work with strip clubs. But in New York, where I'm based, I'm not seeing that kind of synergy at all. And I do think a lot of the issues are, if not the same, then quite similar. The funny part about this, writing this article is, I do this YouTube show called Nobody's Watching Wrestling with Ariel Italic and Lady Berica, who are two wonderful New York drag queens, where we review pro wrestling. And when I was sharing this article, a lot of pro wrestlers were chiming in and saying, like, wow, we have a lot of this initiative the drag world has.
Yeah, performers. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's all sort of similar. Me and Lucia used to be involved in this performance art open mic. And I remember, like, getting into some tiffs with the host being like, we are pulling in a larger and larger audience each month, and I think we should ask for a cut of the bar. And it's just like, right. Oh, we don't want to like, you know, bite the hand that feeds us. We don't want to like, and which is totally understandable. Like, it's like, we don't want to mess with a place that's giving us this space for free. But it's also like,
It's crazy too, though, because in the dance communities or whatever, like when there's performers, sometimes you actually have to pay the bar.
Like, yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Like, and then DJs, I was at the same bar that we would do the open mic at, the weekend DJ people who had those slots on lock, they would get a cut of the bar.
Right.
And so it's like, what's the difference? If we're pulling in a similar amount of people, what's the difference?
It's complicated too, because I think increasingly, well, I've noticed this a little bit. Like, I'm looking for a venue in Manhattan right now. Like, I mostly do my nightlife events in Brooklyn, and I'm looking for a venue in Manhattan. And they have a lot more situations where there's a minimum where you have to hit and then you make money. Yeah. Don't hit that minimum, you have to pay the bar, which I think is...
Yeah, it's bullshit. I booked a show at, I'm going to put them on blast. I booked a show at Hollow recently, and they were trying to give me shit to get me to pay in a significant amount for a Sunday night. Like,
right.
And I'm just like, no, I just told them no. Like, I'm like, I want to be able to pay the performers. So I will give you half of what you're asking for, because I think that's fair. Like,
right.
You know?
And DJs are in an interesting position. Again, this is talking from my own experience, where some bars value us very much and will pay us directly, either a percent of bar or a flat fee, and other bars do not value us at all and will pay us nothing. And it's the club promoter or the promoter of the event specifically, or whatever drag queen is in charge that night, that actually pays us out of her pocket. So again, you're encountering a whole plethora of different like pay situations, none of which are particularly good.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me too of like the different performance scenarios I've encountered when you do stuff with galleries and everything. Like sometimes, like, you know, I've done stuff and I'm really happy to have been compensated for like the dances that I've participated in. But there's like other times when I see friends who will be like in a performance and someone just asks them to do a thing and they're like, oh, this is cool, I'm helping out my friend. And then it's just this weird situation where like the artist gets paid to do the performance, but then like not enough to pay people to help. So you have to really like get everyone in this weird, like enthusiastic place where you sort of like guide them away from the idea of money. You just think like, no, it's going to be so sick, dude. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be cool. Where they're like hanging out and we're in this location and all these like important people and this exposure is going to happen. And it's always just like,
yeah,
it's like, man, I love it. Oh, wait, there was that one thing. It was like, we can't give you any money for this, but like the exposure is going to be amazing. And then it's like a comic and the next panel is like someone going, oh, that's so great because my rent is 800 exposures.
Right. And I think there's like a growing awareness of like the kind of exposure trap in drag and, you know, wrestling, even writing, which is also obviously something I do.
Illustration, which is a huge part of our listenership.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think people like websites or clubs are kind of recognizing that that rhetoric is, like, the time is up for that rhetoric. But that's not stopping them from not paying people. Now they're just kind of nakedly saying, like, we're just not going to pay you.
Have you all considered doing a strike like the strippers did last year?
You know, I think in nightlife, that's a complicated issue because they're at least in New York, I can't speak for other cities. I can speak a little bit for Boston because that's where I learned to DJ. But in New York, where I've been working for the past almost decade, you can't get nightlifers to agree on anything. And there's a lot of territoriality about which bars are doing what and who can book what where. And I don't think that should be the case, but it is the case. So I think organizing some kind of mass strike isn't going to work just because there is, and this is the same thing with, like, why isn't there a union? Like, it just doesn't feel like there's enough kind of cohesion between the people who are involved in this scene to really do something like that.
Yeah, similarly, I guess it's a little different because I keep saying strippers. It just seems like they had an analogous issue. Sorry, I love strippers.
It's something that we should be all learning from each other.
This is kind of like they like successfully built a coalition of dancers who are pitted against each other, and like, you know, usual business practice is to be like, you know, they have like real serious divides between like aesthetics, and that boils down to like a lot of racism, and it's super intense, but they actually like somehow manage to communicate that they all need to come together on the issue of like the venues not taking care of their rights and like honestly being really predatory and abusive and I don't know, like, how their movement has continued, but it would be awesome, you know, if there are any people who were a part of that who are listening, like, maybe to connect.
Yes.
Yes. I think a huge difference here is that in terms of a viable career, drag has not been thought of as, like, something you could really make money off of until about 6 years ago, you know, like, the idea of being a full-time drag queen, even in New York, was kind of laughable until Drag Race kind of exploded in the way it did. So a lot of the politics around it are just, quite frankly, very new. And I hope that in the future, you know, queens and kings and performers of all genders can start working together for organizations like that. But they don't exist yet, partially just because no one ever really thought of this as something that was actually even considered labor or considered something of cultural value or considered as something important in the world.
I definitely wanted to bring up Drag Race because I want to shout out my housemate, Linda Felcher, who we have these conversations very, very often about Drag Race. Whenever they restructure Drag Race, like I remember, was it last year where they added an extra hour or like a whole like extra hour to Drag Race, which affects clubs all around the country who make a lot of money hosting Drag Race viewing parties and then doing a show after. But then nobody wants to stay for 3 hours.
Right. I actually wrote about this for Nylon Mag also because there was a time where Drag Race was on Monday nights and then they moved to Friday nights. And of course, you know, a VH1 executive in a building, in like a glass tower building, doesn't give a fuck, right? Like they don't care. But Monday nights were a dead night at gay bars. Friday nights were busy.
Yes.
Now, because everyone was coming to the gay bars for Drag Race parties, suddenly Monday was like a new source of income for these places. But when they moved it to Friday, it ruined it. So a lot of these places lost tons and tons of money over what seemed like a fairly inconsequential decision in terms of programming. But VH1 has no vested interest in supporting the community. I mean, I'm not saying that like against VH1, they're just like a mega corporation.
They basically have a monopoly. I mean, I'd blame this a little on WoW Presents too, because they seem to monopolize a lot of like what, like drag content. They just buy up any sort of even third party drag show and put it in their network.
So I'm waiting for that.
Oh my god. Oh my god. We need to get Katya to help us make a RuPaul strike.
Yeah, because she's got the communist thing going.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's on brand.
Right. I mean, I'm sure those girls are under a lot of tight things about what they can or cannot say about Miss Rue nowadays after being on the show.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I thought it was very brave of Manila Luzon to recently post her period-inspired dress, which was banned from the show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that mind-boggling that in 2018, 2019, that would be controversial. Really, truly strange.
It's bizarre. It's a big deal that this huge platform, one of the hugest platforms for drag, has all of this creative control over how drag works and what is seen by the masses. And so maybe that could be a route that drag performers could take, is maybe in the form of an open letter of some sort, if a strike isn't possible, and you could just get performers to sign it.
But I guess what would the demands be? You know,
right.
We can't even agree on that, because there are kind of stratifications, and this is, again, very, very, very new for the world of nightlife and drag specifically. Like, so you have your Drag Race queens that are like the kind of top tier paid performer. Then you have kind of famous international queens who might be famous because of a video of theirs went viral, or because they're in the same drag family as a Drag Race member or something like that. Then you have like queens that are popular locally and can demand pretty high pay from local establishments. And then you have, you know, a next level of kind of newer, younger, fresher, artier queens who can't even get paid at the end of the night. So like, there is a hierarchy here that's developing, but it's so new that trying to get each kind of level of the hierarchy to agree on some kind of demand when their experiences are so vastly different is like a huge challenge.
I would say it, like, mostly the demands are not necessarily on like the creator of some kind of culture, but more on the environment in which these experiences are taken in, you know. So like cornering venues into stopping the practice of making people like pay them to be there is one really good start. It's just that everyone can benefit off of that and like agree that venues shouldn't be like, you know, exploiting everyone. Because at the end of the day, it's not like, you know, fans are, like, they want to support, but they don't necessarily know how.
Right.
And like artists want to share, but they need to be compensated. So like take the pressure off of people, you know?
Right.
Like,
I mean, I'm very, very cynical about a lot of this, having done it for 10 years. And I guess my retort would be, what is the incentive that these bars or venues have to even listen? Because for a lot of them, which are owned by straight people who don't value drag as an interesting or important cultural phenomenon, they'll just say, okay, we'll get live bands. Okay, we'll get comedians. Okay, we'll get something else. So I just think a lot of demands are falling on deaf ears, because the answer for them is like, we'll just do something else. Like, it's not a particularly interesting. They're only doing drag because it makes them money. You know, they're not doing it because they think it's an important community organizing tool or an important outlet for collective trauma. You know, they're doing it because this is what's making them money right now. So if they realize that it's more trouble than it's worth, they'll just stop doing it.
That's the problem. Then the groups get pitted against each other, because it's not right for them to be charging a musician to use their venue either. Yeah, totally. Literally. Yeah, it happens all the time. The Bitter End is notorious for that, for example.
I mean, that's why I just keep thinking it would be awesome if these strikes like got some, you know, like if comedians started supporting strippers too, and if everyone started coming together, and if it's like, oh, these people have started it, where's their movement at? Can I come to one of their marches and be like, I represent my community, and I actually see that we could all benefit from making this exploitation stop.
For we all use us. This venue. None of us want to be exploited.
It's
yeah.
Like, it's like there almost needs to be some kind of like lowbrow version of SAG where it's strippers, comedians, yes. punk yeah. artists, drag queens, wrestlers.
Yes, I love yes. that.
All of us.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's the thing about labor organizations that is that there is a little bit of like a situation where only things deemed as legitimate labor can really be turned into unions. And quite frankly, which was part of the point of the article, most people don't view drag or, you know, wrestling or comedy as a legitimate form of labor.
Yeah, that's a huge, that's our whole show, you know, art and labor. That's the brass tacks that we're trying to tell people. Right. It is.
but it's like, you can make that argument. And I think this is what's interesting about like art and labor as like a very concept is like, of course, you can make that argument about like painting or sculpture or something. But like when it comes to something that is like traditionally viewed as, you know, lascivious, bawdy, illicit, violent, sexually deviant, like then the rules are suddenly different because like how do you get people who are relatively conservative in their worldviews to even begin to think of that as something that is work?
I mean, yeah, it is a difficult question, but I mean, like we were saying before, even our most recent episode, for example, we had the PS1 MoMA's art installers on to talk about their struggles to demand fair pay for their work, which is work that's very similar to, you know, any sort of like engineering or planning or at like.
Yeah, yeah they're doing some they do have a lot of weird abstract tasks that are tacked on to the actual physical labor of moving stuff around or getting getting a look together.
And the new museum is also unionizing and has a lot of workers in its ranks that are that like has traditionally never like the MoMA for their so they're unionizing with the United Auto Workers 2110
oh, interesting.
Which the MoMA is a part of and has been a part of since the 50s. And so in the 50s, that's how the MoMA workers approached it. They were just like, right. we're just going to go to the auto workers and yeah. talk to
well,
them.
Well, they're like one of the biggest unions.
Yeah.
But then
similar to like drag queens going up to SAG and being like,
yes.
you know.
Yeah, why not?
Yes, why not? That's
well, another factor that I'm thinking of here too is like, okay, so let's say we're comparing like MoMA workers to drag queens, which like, okay, there's a lot of similarities in the kinds of intellectual labor and whatever. But like a big difference is a lot of these drag queens, like, and I'm not saying this to be shady, like they don't have the same level of education. They were people who were kicked out of their homes.
Yes.
At an early age. They were people who have fought for survival in an underground economy. And it's not, it's not the same kind of like, they're not always, of course, this is not across the board, but traditionally and, you know, in a lot of instances, there just isn't the same kind of, like, they don't learn, you know, how to do organize, like, community organizing, you know? Like, it's not a skill that's taught, like, when you're just trying to survive as a queer person on the street. So, like, sure, someone who has, like, a master's in engineering who's getting paid, you know, pitifully by the MoMA can come up with an organizational strategy for demonstrations and whatever.
Well, but that's like, not necessarily the thing, though. Like, I think that's like painting an unfair kind of dichotomy because a lot of the people who get into like art handling and stuff, they don't necessarily have higher degrees either.
Sure. But I think a lot of them do, too.
Well, a lot of drag queens do. Yeah. So I'm thinking
just a difference.
I'm thinking of like the really well-off white queens that don't care if their labor is exploited because they're rich and they have other jobs that pay them and they spend a shitload on their wardrobe and do drag for fun.
But that's sort of also a straw man too. Like yeah. I don't know a single drag queen that's like that. You know, like there is this kind of like, and I see it in nightlife as a kind of, like when younger, poorer, hungrier queens are like, you know, these rich kids are coming in and they're doing drag as a hobby and they're not taking it seriously. I don't know who these people are. You know, like I'm not meeting drag queens with like three master's degrees who are working, you know, some kind of cushy executive job and then putting on 3 hours worth of paint at night. You know, like,
no, not a cushy executive job, but even a job in general, because, you know, we're talking people who are in such marginalized backgrounds that they can't get like any sort of day job. So they you know, really are relying on whatever. So it's like, even if like there's a leg up at all for even having being able to hold down a day job, it's a leg up, right. I feel. I mean, it's splitting hairs in certain sense, but you know, it's a complicated thing, and I don't want us to be defeatist about it. I think it's worth fighting, and I think it's telling that your article got passed around so much. Like, if people are hungry for this type of conversation and to figure out, what do we do to get down to brass tacks? You know, what do we do to follow in Marsha's footsteps, follow like in our ancestors' footsteps and organize ourselves?
Right. Yeah, I mean, writing it and living it, like I said, my attitude about it is highly, highly, highly cynical. You know, I do believe in the future it will come to fruition, but right now the kind of material conditions surrounding it, I feel very, very dismal about.
I totally get feeling cynical. A lot of like starting this podcast was I worked for an art magazine that was trying to organize and we failed, you know. it happens, but you know, I think I found your article to be really inspiring at the same time. And I don't want to fall into that classic queer nihilism, you know.
Well, that's firmly where I belong.
Eric, before you have to go, I know you have to go soon. Do you have any upcoming shows anywhere? A lot of our listenership is in New York City.
Oh, cool. We are, I mean, this seems like ironic to say considering all of the things I was just criticizing about it, but it was money. We do, me and Arielle Italic and occasionally Lady Berica Andrews do drag race viewing parties at Brooklyn Bazaar, an institution which does pay its performers quite well and kindly and are wonderful to work with.
That's great to know.
Yes. Brooklyn Bazaar. Everyone should go support them. Love them. So that's every Friday, 8 p.m. And then after that, WrestleMania weekend, we have a bunch of wrestling events coming up, including a lip sync battle tournament, which will happen on April 6th, and a WrestleMania viewing party again at St. Vitus on April 7th.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Nobodies are great. You're also involved in the Mixed Nobodies pageant, right? You're the DJ?
Yeah. The Nobody pageant is like our like big kind of passion project, which is where we get basically every single unclassifiable drag weirdo in Brooklyn and New York to compete against each other to see who's the biggest drag weirdo of them all.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's a great show. And where can folks find you on Twitter, Instagram?
Twitter, I'm at Eric_Shorey, Shorey. Instagram, you can follow me at The Nobodies NYC. Facebook at DJ Accident Report, which is my DJ name, or just search for The Nobodies there. And our wrestling show, you could just type in Nobody's Watching Wrestling on YouTube and it should pop up.
Yes, it's a great show. I think there's some crossover here. We were just on Street Fight, which is a podcast with a big wrestler fan base.
Yeah,
it's a great show. They did a crossover show with WrestleSplania. Do you know that one?
I love Rachel and Cass.
Yeah. So I think we'll probably get some of their listeners too after that. And people should know about the Nobodies because it's a great you know. I like watching wrestling for the fashion, you know?
Yeah. That's what mostly we're watching for. Although, like, Ariel and Berica less so, but, like, I am a lifelong wrestling fan. And, like, I, you know, there's reasons to watch it for, like, erotic gratification because it's muscly men. And then there's reasons to watch it for, like, aesthetic gratification because it's not sequins. I actually really like the combat part of it. It's, like, almost embarrassing to admit.
Wow. That's cool. Well, it was so nice to have you on our show. Thank you for coming on. I know you're really busy.
Oh my God, thank you for having me. This was such a good time. I'm sorry I talked your ear off.
No, you're our guest.
You're our wonderful guest, and we hope people you know, find you and read the article, and we'll link to the Nylon article as well.
Cool.
Great.
All right. Talk to you later. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, baby. We're on Patreon now.
That's right, folks. We now have a Patreon. It is patreon.com/artandlabor.
Oh my God, I love Patreon.
It's like easier for people, I guess, because it takes PayPal. It has a feed that's going to just automatically have all of our bonus stuff in it, and I think will be a lot easier. We'll still update the drip, and people can stay on that if they prefer it for whatever reason. I don't care. We'll play both against each other. I don't give a shit.
Like, I'm looking to put my money somewhere, and I heard that you have a Patreon. Could I possibly get like a mug or something for my money?
That's right. That's right, Lucia. We're going to produce a series of mugs.
Wow.
That's going to be our next physical object thing.
Wow.
If you sign up at the $15 level, you will receive a mug or a shirt, because we still have some shirts and we want to print more shirts as well.
Oh, yeah. We got to design. Sorry, it's me for real. yeah, we got a design, and it's got.
Yeah,
it's going to go up on the Instagram. So follow us on the Instagram. Tell us if you like the shirt design. We are working here for you.
We'll make whatever the fuck you want.
We're here to make things that you will like. So tell us, do you like it? Do you hate it? Do you want one? Do you want 20? Do you want all of your family to wear the same t-shirt with you? And then you could synchronize. You could become part of the Borg.
Come part of the Borg today at patreon.com/artandlabor. Thanks, everyone.
Lots of fun. Lots of fun.